Boker Tov, world. Today's daf in Masechet Sanhedrin, brought to you from Yerushalayim Ir HaKodesh, is daf Chov Beit, and we got up to Omer Mar Zutra, V'item Amar Ukva. But Chilandi Tenatural Yisrael Bichtav Ivri, V'loshan HaKodesh, Chazra V'nitnava and Bimei Ezra, Bichtav Ashurit, V'loshan Arami. So now, we had spoken yesterday, the last thing that we talked about, was the fact that a melech is b'chuyev to write a second Sefer Torah. We were medayik that from the lashon of Mishneh HaTorah Hazot. Mishneh HaTorah means this double Torah, this copy of the Torah. So that means that even if the melech had a Sefer Torah before as a hedyot, or has a Sefer Torah that was given to him, left him by his father, he has a chiyuv to write his own Sefer Torah besides that. So once we've spoken about that lashon in the pasuk of Mishneh Torah, turns out that there are other implications of Mishneh Torah. So as Mar Ukva, or Mar Zutra said, that Mishneh means a lashon of shinui, a change, which means that originally the Torah was given to Yisrael in Ktav Ivri v'Loshon HaKodesh. So the original Torah, now this is a question we're going to see later on, what is this supposed to mean? That it actually, that the Luchos were written in the Ktav Ivri. You'll remember the Ktav Ivri is the ancient script. You know the script that is, most people learn that that's what it's referring to. It's the same script that the Shomronim use in their Sefer Torah. And here we've got an example from Halon. I can't, it's not showing up very well. But anyway, most learned that that is the Ktav Ivri, the one that was on the coins, which Alon is trying to show us. And that the meaning of it's written in that script was not a reference to the Sefer Torah or to the Luchos, but rather was a reference to the way that Klal Yisrael wrote their Torah. But we'll see. You know what? After we finish the sugya over here in the Gemara, I'll go through with you the various rayas and indications about how it is that we're meant to understand this. So, initially the Torah was given in this Ktav Ivri, and then later in the time of Ezra, Chazra v'nitna lehem bimei Ezra b'ktav Ashurit u'lashon Arami. So later on when Ezra came, and he was once again, he was brought, rebuilt the Beis HaMikdash, and he was teaching all of Klal Yisrael, as we'll see, Chok u'Mishpat. So the Sefer Torah was then given in Ktav Ashurit. Now this, we'll see why it's called Ktav Ashurit. Biru lehem l'Yisrael Ktav Ashurit v'loshon HaKodesh, v'hinichu l'hedyotot Ktav Ivrit v'loshon Arami. So Klal Yisrael chose at that point that they would use even amongst themselves. Now Ktav Ashurit, as you know, is an extremely complex and very beautiful ktav and very meduyak and has many areas in it in which it's merames to all types of different elements, both in the ways that the letters are constructed and different letters incorporate pieces of other letters and the way that they have, as the Gemara speaks about in Menachos, the way that the tagim on the letters are also filled with tilei tilim, shel halochos and rebozim. None of that is in the very primitive Ktav Ivri. So to say that they were Bolcher Ktav Ashurit, which is much more complex, was a tremendous madriga, that Klal Yisrael accepted that this is the way that they're going to actually write, and that it is the way, the original Lashon HaKodesh, is the way that they will now begin using for Torah, even though that while they were in Bavel, we know that the Sefer of Ezra and the Sefer of Nehemiah is written, much of it, in Aramaic. So they left the Aramaic for whoever these hedyotos are. So the Gemara says, who are these hedyotot? Omer chisde kutoy. These are a reference to the kutim. And indeed, the kutim ad ayom hazeh, the shomronim, actually have their Sefer Torah written in Ktav Ivrit. My Ktav Ivrit, Omer chisde, that's the Ktav Libona'a. It's sort of a large boxy script, which is primitive, and that's what it's referring to. And in fact, the Braita says, Rabbi Yossi Omer, Ra'uy haya Ezra shetinatein Torah al yadol Yisrael. Ilmale Kadmo Moshe, Ezra HaSofer was so great that had it not been that Moshe Rabbeinu had given the Torah and taught the Torah to Yisrael first, he would have been roi that the Torah should have been given through him to Yisrael. Now, this does not mean that the Torah would have been able to be given through him. It means it would be able to have been given through him to Yisrael, to be taught by him to Yisrael. But the actual metzias of the Torah requires the Nevi'as of Moshe, the darga of the Nevi'as of Moshe, and that we know, lo kam ish in the world, because lo kam navi kam Moshe od, would have had this madrega that would have been able to be punim uponim to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to be able to be mekabel Torah. But the fact that the Torah should be given through him to Yisrael, he was on that madrega. We see that from the way that the Pasuk describes Moshe and describes Ezra. B'Moshe hu omeru Moshe Allah el ha-Elohim. This lashon of Aliyah, that he went up to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and by Ezra, we find that it says, hu Ezra Allah mi Bavel. So just like the Aliyah that is referred to by Moshe Rabbeinu is a reference directly to Kabbalah Satera, af Aliyah ha-Amur la-Alan is a reference to Tera, and that he was able to teach it. And indeed, by Moshe it says, "Votitzi v'Hashem ve'etayilamed etchem chukim u'mishpatim." HaKadosh Baruch Hu commanded me at that time to teach you these chukim u'mishpatim. And by Ezra it says, "Ki Ezra echin levavo lidrosh et Torat Hashem v'lahasot u'lelamed b'Yisrael chok u'mishpat." So the same language, but you see very clearly from the pasuk that the idea over here is the ability to give over to Yisrael to be malabed them. The Chukim and the Mishpat. The Alpha Pisha lo nitna Torah al yado, so even though the fact is that in the end Moshe Rabbeinu was the one who was gave Yisrael over the Torah, but even so, nishtana al yado haktav. The way that the Torah was written was changed at the time of Ezra. Shenemar, uchtav hanishtevan katuv Aramit, umeturgam, aramit. So we find that they sent a letter, which was all part of the political scheming to prevent the completion of the Beis HaMikdash and of Yerushalayim. And it says that the Goyim that were living in Eretz Yisrael, they did their best to prevent that. And one of the things that they did is they wrote in this Ktav HaNishtevan. It's not clear what the simple meaning in the Pasuk of Nishtavan is, but the Gemara is taking it over here to mean Shinui, Nishtavan, Shinishtana. So they wrote the letter in this new Kitav, and it was the letter that at that point had been written in Aramit, and it was Meturgam in detail in Aramit, and they wrote that letter to the king back in Bavel. And we find Beferish that when it comes to that strange story of the writing on the wall in Daniel, so Belshazzar had taken out the kelim of the Beit HaMikdash, and a hand appears and writes this message, this mysterious message on the wall, and everybody is terrified and shaking, and they can't figure out the message. So it says, Lo chalin kitava lebikreu fishrei lohoda lemalka. It says, Beferish, that there wasn't anybody there who was able to make any sense of that writing and to explain it to the king. Now, that means that since the only one apparently who was able to read that writing, it means that, in fact, it was a completely new ktav that people were not familiar with before. So there were lots of Jews that were there, and nonetheless, they couldn't read it. And the fact is that the Torah calls Mishneh Torah Mishneh Torah as a reference to Ktav HaRa'uy LeHishtanot, that it was initially meant to be in a Ktav that would be changed in the course of the generations, referring to Ezra. Why did we call it Ktav Ashuri? Because they brought this Ktav back with them when they came with Ezra from Ashur. So this was Ashur and Bavel. That was when they began utilizing this Ktav, and therefore it's called Ktav Ashurit. However, it is not a Ktav that was ever used by Ashur. There's no evidence of such a ketav appearing anywhere, actually, except in Klal Yisrael. And that was a miyuchad ketav. I'm going to see other shitas in a moment, that ketav was always in use by Klal Yisrael, but that it was kept by the chachomim for special people, that it should be miyuchad for inyonim of kedusha, and shouldn't be exposed as a simple ketav that would appear on your TV screen in advertisements for Tide washing machines. So that was not what it was meant to be, and therefore they kept it in a very special way. But we'll see. That's why it was called Ketav HaShurit. It should not be mistaken for Assyrian script, the way that people translate it. Okay, so this is Rabbi Yossi Shita. Now, not everybody agrees with the Shita, and here we have a Braita that explains Rebbe's Shita. Tanya. Rebbe Omer, no. Patrila b'ktav zeh nitna Torah l'Yisrael. The Torah was originally given to Klal Yisrael with the Ketav HaShurit. What happened was that after Klal Yisrael was chote with the Mais HaEgel, kivan shechatu nehepach lahem l'roitz, they were not able to read it because they were madrega had gone down, and that changed it for them to be unable to even read it and figure out what the heck it was writing about. And so because of that, or some actually learned some of the Achronim, the Marsha, that the Ro'etz means busted up. So in other words, the Ketav HaShurit was busted up into Ketav Ivri. Okay, and so the Pashtus of the Gemara. But in any event, they found that they were unable to read that Ketav. And that's why when the Ketav came back, when the Malach used it and wrote on the wall of Belshazzar, they didn't have anyone except Daniel that was able to explain it. So kivan shechazru behem, when they did teshuva during the time of Daniel and Ezra and Roy to come back and rebuild the Beis HaMikdash, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave them back the ability to understand that ketav, and echziru lehem, shenemar shuvu levitzaron asirei hatikva. So it's very interesting, by the way. There's a lovely story. I believe it was by Oliver Sacks, about someone who had a stroke, and the only language he couldn't read at all. This guy was like a college professor. He was a very, very educated person. And all of a sudden, he woke up one morning, had a stroke, and looked at writing, and it just was like a bunch of symbols that he could not figure out. Shumpanim v'ofen, his brain was incapable of interpreting these symbols. So he felt very bad for him. So anyway, so years later, he bumped into him. And so he asked him, so how is he making out? So he said, oh, very good. He just finished rereading War and Peace. He said, how did you do it? He said, I learned how to read Lashon HaKodesh. And that I was able to read. So he explains that the area of the brain that works to read Hebrew is a totally different area of the brain, and it wasn't affected at all. And someone was smart enough, a neurologist was smart enough to explain that to him. So all he needed to do was learn how to read Hebrew. So now I can read. I read everything in Hebrew. Like, is that crazy? Anyway, amazing story. So it was Oliver Sacks. I remember now. Okay, anyway, so here, Dafka, they weren't able to read that, right? They weren't able to read that ksav. It was as if everyone had had a stroke, and suddenly, because of the Chet HaEgel, they found that they couldn't read that ksav. And the remez to this is that it says, Shuvu levitzaron asirei hatikva. So go back to your fortress, to Yerushalayim, you who were prisoners this entire time, prisoners of hope. Gam hayom magid mishnah shivlach. Unbelievable pasuk. I'm going giving back to you the Mishnah, meaning the Mishnah Torah that was meant to be changed back into Ketav HaShurit. Today, I'm giving you back that Ketav HaShurit. You'll be able to read it. So according to this, why was it called Ketav HaShurit? If it was always with them, so why do we say that it's Ksav Ashurit, Lama Nikra Shema Ashurit, according to Rabbi, Shemu Usheret Bichtav. It is the richest and most beautiful of Ktav, because it has all of the Ramazim, as we know from Otsias and Rabbi Akiva. And, of course, this is also part of the entire sugya, that we have to understand how to learn the Gemara Menachas that says that Rabbi Akiva found HaKadosh Baruch Hu attaching the Kitrei Otiot, which, of course, is only Shayach to Ksav Ashuri. There are no Kitrei Otiot and Ktav Livuna, which seems to be very clearly that the original Maimon Har Sinai was in terms of Ksav Ashuris, the way that Rebbe is explaining it. So that's why it's called...
It's Moshe Rabbeinu for Rebbe Akiva. Right? That's what Rebbe meant.
Who did I say?
Doesn't matter.
Okay. I'm sorry. If I said Rebbe Akiva, then I meant Moshe Rabbeinu. Yes, thank you. Loma Nikra Shema Ashurit, according to this, Shemu Usheret Bichtav. This is now two deos that we have, Rebbe and Rebbe Yosef. Now we have a third sheet. Rebbe Shimon ben Elazar Omer Mishum Rebbe Eliezer ben Partasha Omar Mishum Rebbe Elazar Hamoda'i. I don't know what you're talking about. Ktav ze lo nishtana kol ikar. There was no change whatsoever in the osias of the ksiva of the Torah, and we see that from the fact that it says vavei ha'amudim. So we're talking about in the binyan of the Mishkan. So one of the things that's mentioned is that there was these hooks that held up the amudim that were there in the Chotzer HaMishkan, and they're called vavim. Now, the reason that they're called vavim is because they are shaped like the letter vav, which is not true in Ktav Livona. Ktav Livona does not have a letter vav shaped like a hook. So why would it be called Vaveya Amudim? And it's also a beautiful hekesh. And in the same way that the Vavim of the Amudim never changed, meaning that the Amudim of the Mishkan was Luderes, that's Oymed Le'elam L'Almeyon Omim, so Ma Amudim Lo Nishtanu, Ha Vavim Lo Nishtanu. The Vav of the Amudim was never changed, and neither was the letter Vav in the Ktiva. So no matter what you guys are telling me, I don't believe it. And furthermore, it says, El Hayudim Bichtavam V'Chiloshona. So first of all, this shows that even initially, it was certainly given in Lashon HaKodesh. Now, if you take a look at the story of Esther, it says that they sent out the letters to all of the 127 different countries. And to the Jews, they sent it in their ktav and in their lashon. So just like everybody agrees that the original lashon was Lashon HaKodesh, ma lashonam lo nishtana, af ktavam lo nishtana. It means that everybody understood that this is the way that we always wrote, and therefore they wrote these letters to us in this way. So in other words, in terms of Rabbi Yossi, who says that, well, they used to use originally ktav ivri. So for that, Reb Shimon shows it's not true, because the Ktav Ivri did not have Vavei Amudim. And in terms of Rebbe, who claims that even though originally there were Vavei Amudim, but that afterwards it was actually forgotten, and it was not until Golas Bava, when they came back, that we then learned the Ktav Ashuris again, then why did they write the letters in Ktav Ashurit, Kiktavam V'Chiloshonam? That is clearly saying that it never changed. The Ktav and the Lashon were exactly the same. So therefore, Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar is bringing this raya against both Rabbi Yossi and against Rebbe, no matter how you learn. So then what is the meaning of Mishneh Torah? Ma'ani mekayem Mishneh Torah? Not that the Torah was meant to change its language, but it means, as we said before, that a melech has to have Shnei Sifrei Torah. One Sefer Torah that he puts into Beit Gnasav, as before. So, achat shemunachat lo beBeit Gnasav. And the other one, the one that is Yotzev v'nichneset imo, otar sheYotzev v'nichneset imo, osim otar kemin kemiya, v'tola bizro'o, shenamar shiviti Hashem l'negdi tamid. So therefore, according to him, We make the Sefer Torah, we write it in a way that is small enough for him to be able to carry around with him, as the Marshal says, as also some of the Gaonim who point that out, even though the Marshal makes fun of the Marshal and says, Ein zela divrei nevias, where did they get the idea that was written in very small ktab? Fine. All right. But anyway, the point is, that doesn't mean literally it should be a kamiyah. That's not exactly a derech kovet of the Sefer, and the Rambam doesn't bring that it should be like a kamiyah, but it means in the same way that when you have something that is always meant to be with you, like your tefillin that is supposed to be always on you and become almost an extension of your skull, so too this Sefer Torah is like an extension of the Melech. Wherever he goes, it goes with him. As it says, Shivisi Hashem l'negdi tamid. So wait a minute, what about according to Rabbi Yossi and according to Rebbe? I mean, it doesn't say Mishnah Torah Hazot. So how do they understand Shiviti Hashem l'negdi tamid? What is that referring to? Ahumi bo'eleket Rav Chana bar Bizna. By the way, that is a big, big issue. Because the pashtus of the Gemara is that if you hold like Rabbi Yossi and Rebbe, then you don't hold of the drush of Mishnah Torah Hazot, and that actually the Melech does not have to write another Sefer Torah. And that seems to be the pashtus, and many shitas say this. There are others who say, we don't find anyone ever saying the Farish that there is no mitzvah to write Shnei Sefer Torah. Okay, but that's an aside. Here the question is, what does Shiviti mean according to them? Now, this is a reference to someone who is Eimed B'Tfila. If he's Eimed B'Tfila, he has to recognize that he's standing in the presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And remember, according to the Rambam, this is the central meaning of Kavana B'Tfila. It's not the Kavana for the words of the Tfila, it's the Kavana for Shivisi Hashem L'Negdi Tamid. There is an incredible Taz, by the way, which is just it's a frightening idea. So, you know, there's the halacha not to walk in front of someone who is mispalel. Most understand that halacha to be that you can't walk within arba ames of the mispalel because you're going to be messing up his ability to concentrate. The Taz says the reason you can't walk within arba ames is because the place that a mispalel is standing is kadosh. And the same way that you don't have a right to trample over, like HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Moshe, this mokum is a mokum kadosh, take off your shoes. The same thing is true, says the Taz, the four amos where a person is standing in Tvila. It's not that he's imagining that he's standing in front of the Shekhinah. It's that he is standing in front of the Shekhinah. And that therefore that place becomes mikudash during the time that the person is standing davening there. Quite an astonishing assertion. The mamish, that's how the Taz learns the halacha. Anyway, but how do we understand, according to Rabbi Shimon, so Rabbi Shimon was saying that no, there's no such thing, and there was always Kitav Ashurit. So then what's the handwriting on the wall? The whole story of the handwriting on the wall is the mystery. Nobody could figure out what it said until Daniel came and he explained it. Well, what's the big mystery if they always use that Kitav according to Rabbi Lozer HaModoy? So my local in Ketava Lamikrai, what does it mean that there was no one who was capable of reading this type of writing? Why? Amar Rav, that's because it was written as a gematria ichtiv lahan. It was written as a type of numerical code. And what it really, what they saw written on the wall were the words yatat yatat adach pukhamat, which doesn't exactly mean anything. But if you recognize that it's Atbash, so then in Atbash, where we just take the alphabet, the aleph base, we bend it across each other so that the first letter is the last letter. So the aleph is the tough and so on and so forth all the way down. So then what you get is yatat, yatat, adach, pukhmat ends up meaning mene, mene, tikal, ufarsin. So the only one who recognized it was an Atbash was Daniel. So what did he say to him that it meant, my parishul? He said what it means is, Mene tekel ufarsim. So he tells the king, this is the meaning of the message. Mene, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, has counted up your years of kingdom and has decided it's over, baby. Mene, now you think you're in the middle of your malchus, you is finished. And the second word, tekel, means to be weighed, which means, as he tells the king, tekilta b'mozanaya, you have been weighed in scales. And unfortunately, ishtakachat chasir, you seem to be missing something. You's finished, buddy. Parasin means, we split it. Prisat malchutach, we're going to bust up your malchus and hand it over to Modai v'poras. V'ayivat le'modai v'poras. And as the next word says, Bei Belailia, it was that night that Belshazzar dropped dead. Anyway, Shmuel Amar, that wasn't the code. It's wrong. The actual letters were there. And it's not that it was in Atbash. The only thing was that they were written in a very strange way. So Mene, Tekel, Ufarsin were written in three letters down, Mem, Nun, Aleph, from top to bottom, Mem, Nun, Aleph again, Tov, Kuf, Lamed, Tekel, and then Ufarsin was Vav, Pei, Resh, and then go to the top, Samach, Yod, Nun, which is a reference to Chinese writing, and therefore it's called Sin. So we have Ufarsin. So according to him, actually, what it said was, Mamtus, Nankepi, Aalran. So that's what people saw written on the wall, which didn't make any sense to them. So he showed them how to read it. Rabbi Yochanan says, no, it wasn't so complicated. It was just written, each word was written backwards. So Mene was Anam, and Takal was Lakat, and Ufarsin was Nisrafu. So that's how it was written. Anam, Lakat, and Nisrafu. Rav Ashi says, what it was Pig Latin. The first two letters of the word were flipped. So it was nama, katal, pursin. But the point is that essentially it was the same ktav, because according to Rav Elazar HaModoi, it is a ktav that was never changed. And next time, Gavi, you get into visit Rav Elazar HaModoi, you should review the sugya over there. Please keep me in mind. Okay, so there's a lot of problems with this sugya. I mean, first of all, as I mentioned before, I mean, we know the Gemara Menachos that Moshe Rabbeinu finds HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and it says to him, you know, who's being b'chai of you to put on these little kisrei osiyos. So some actually learn that gufa means that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was putting on the Osiyos on a Ksav that was, in fact, the Ksav Ashuri, and Moshe Rabbeinu was saying, why do you need it since you're going to be giving it in Ksav Ivri? So that's how those Mefarshim learned this. But then there's a whole other problem. The other problem is that, remember, we had in the Gemara of Shabbos that the Mem and Samach Shebeluchos were Omdim only Benes. Because how can you have a letter that has a middle piece in the letter if that middle piece is suspended in midair by some kind of force field? So how could there be a mem, or how could there be a samach? But that means that it was written in Ktav Ashuris, because in Ktav Ivrit, it would actually had to have been the lamed that was Aymed Benes, because the mem and the samach in Ktav Ivri are not round. It's the lamed that is Aymed Benes, because it's like the delta.
Maybe?
Yes, sir.
May, I'm sorry. Other approaches to that, that it's the Dalit, like the Delta, and the Ayin, like the...
Samach. Yeah, I know. Okay. Yeah, that's why it was called Ayin. Fine. But in any of the reason I say that it was actually the Ayin, I'll tell you in a moment, is because of Yerushalmi. We'll talk about it in a second. So basically, because of this, if you take a look here in the Rabbeinu Hananu, the Rabbeinu Hananu says it has to be that for sure was given Biksav Ashuri, and Enoch Yami, the Samach and the Mem, that is following the Halacha. That these, as far as Rabbi Yossi, Marjutra, they're not Lefi, the Kabbalah that we have. However, there are Shitas in the Rishonim that attempt to make sense of this. There is, before I get to explain that to you, let me also point out that there's a problem in any approach that tries to change this from meaning the actual Sefer Torah, which there are many, doesn't mean the Torah was given. It means that Yisrael's writing of the Torah for themselves, the Chumashim, and so on. The point is that it says in the Yerushalmi Beferish that it wasn't the Mem V'Samach that was Omed B'Nes, it was the Ayin that was Omed B'Nes. And therefore, it seems that there is a strong basis for the fact that the Torah was given in Ksav Ivris. So there's a very interesting approach of the Ritbaz. The Ritbaz Tainas, that there were actually two different Ksavim. One was the Luchas HaRishonim, and one was the Luchas HaShniim. And that's the point of its being turned after Chotu Yisroel. It was Ne'apach Lehem L'ro'etz. So the first Luchas were given indeed in Ksav Ashuris. Then it was Ne'apach Lehem L'ro'etz. L'ro'etz means literally smashed, and the luchas were broken. So then the second luchas were not in Ksav Ashuri, and they didn't have all of the remozim that were given in Isis Rabbi Akiva, and because of that, they were in Ktav, specifically Ktav Ivri. Okay, but as I said, there are Rishonim that are metarets, what appear to be these contradictions. So some learn, this is basically based on Ritva or Rajba, that the Luchas themselves were for sure written in Ksav Ashuri, and that was the Sefer Torah, Moshe Rabbeinu, and that was kept in the Azara always, the Ksav Ashuris. But in order that they shouldn't be Mizalzo and Ksav Ashuris and have it turn into Ynet, Chas V'Chalila one day, so therefore they kept Ksav, that Ksav only in the Beis HaMikdash, and therefore all of the Sefer Torah and the Chumashim that were used throughout the land, not in the Beis HaMikdash, was referring to the other Sefer Torah. But the Sefer Torah on Har Sinai and Moshe Rabbeinu's Sefer Torah, that for sure was given in the Ksav Ashuris. So that would mean that, according to this, Marzutra says that it was Nitna L'Yisroel B'Ksav Ivri. He doesn't mean the original Sefer Torah was written in Ksav Ivri. He means that the usage, the common usage, was B'Ksav Ivri. So therefore, most people couldn't read it. But Enoch Inami, those who were privileged to have access to that Torah, we know that the Melech, as Rambam says, the Melech had to actually check his Sefer Torah, Alpi, the Sefer Torah Shema Azara. We know that Ezra's Sefer Torah was checked against the Avonim that Moshe Rabbeinu had made, according to the Midrash. There's the Avonim in which the Torah was written. So, okay, so we have the initial basis of Ksav Ashuris we have, and what the Gemara meant over here was only the popular Torah that people were using as their Chumashim. So their art scroll Chumashim were written in Ktav Ivri at the time. Okay, we're ready now for our... I just wanted to mention before we go on an interesting thing that we ran out of time and I didn't talk about it at the time. And before we take on the next Mishnah, there was also a very important Nakuda that we spoke about, which is the Seder of the Mitzvahs, of the Shalosh Mitzvahs, Nitztavu Yisrael, B'Knisatan La'aretz. And that was the Minui HaMelech and the Mechias Amalek and the Binyan of Beis HaMikdash, in that order. We medayik that we had from various psukim before. Now, the point is, if you take a look at the Knesset of Ezra, none of that was true. They built the Beis HaMikdash, and they didn't have a Minui HaMelech, and they did not have a Milchama with the Oivei Yisrael, and nonetheless, they built the Beis HaMikdash. So, the way that most of the Mepharshim understand that Gemara that we just had is Sholesh Mitzvahs Nitztavu Yisrael Dafka B'Knisatan La'aretz. In other words, at the original Knisa La'aretz, B'mei Yehoshua, those were the mitzvahs that they were Mechuyev. But once there was a Kfiyas of the Kedusha of a Beis HaMikdash, at that point, We don't have the entire 400 years before we're able to go ahead and build a Beis HaMikdash. It's a reconstruction. And the reconstruction is not mechayev that order. And if you take a look in Maaser Sheni, in the Yerushalmi, which we've spoken about, we learned together about quite a few years ago, but in Maaser Sheni, it seems quite clear that Klal Yisrael, in our times, will rebuild the Beis HaMikdash on their own before there's a Bias Mashiach, and before there's necessarily a total victory in all of these laws, all of these wars. So, you know, once we get rid of the Supreme Court, we should be able to handle the Binyan Beis HaMikdash without any problems. That's the main Oivim, and of course that includes Wina. Okay. All right. We're ready. You know, you have to be very careful nowadays. You get arrested for sedition, but Amen. Amen. Okay, we're ready now for our esteemed Capitan, who I'm told is ready to lead the charge against the Supreme Court with Trump at his right side. Go ahead.
I'm trying to think back into my far past, my childhood, about Piglet that we used to play around with in school.
Right,
you know,
yeah.
What do you call it? You know, don't remember how you did it, because I could never be good at it. But,
Ichire. Otsway or ye rabumpe. So now we're continuing the Mishnah that gives us a various dinim of the Melech's things and the Kovet HaMelech. So another din is no one is allowed to ride on the horse of a king. So you can't sit on his chair, his throne. You cannot utilize the scepter of the king. You cannot see him in any type of compromised situation. By the way, there is the same law about the British monarchy. You're not allowed to take pictures of the king or the queen while they're eating. That's a halacha. So here too, you cannot see the king when he's having his haircut, velokeshu arom, and not where, if he's naked, or not where he's in the Beit HaMerchatz, and he's in a bathhouse. These are not covered positions for a king. Shinamar som tasim alech hamelech, as we saw before, there's a special mitzvah to go out of your way to create a sense of awe, shetehe emato alecha. Omer of Yaakov, Omer of Yochanan. This has fascinating implications because it also would include not using the avodim of an eved or the people, the humans that served the eved in a particular type of service, which means that Omer of Yaakov, Omer of Yochanan, Avishag muteret lishlomo vasura l'adoniyahu. That was the reason that Avishag Shunamit, who was part of the king's entourage, and she was the consort, so to speak, of the king, but not a sexual consort, but a sensual consort. So she was supposed to keep him warm, and so on. She was the equivalent of one of the king's kalim, and therefore she is permitted only to another king, but not to someone who's a commoner. So because of that, she was muteret l'Shlomo. He was allowed to utilize Avishag because Shlomo was a melech. And a melech is allowed to be mishtamesh b'sharbitos shemelech. A melech can use the scepter or the kisei of another king. But she was asura l'aduniyahu to head yotu, which is why we find this very dramatic and instant response of Shlomo to Adoniyahu's request that he be allowed to marry Avishag. And so what Shlomo says, that just cost him his life. And Adoniyahu is killed on the spot for even asking to marry Avishag, because it meant that he considered himself a melech who was trying to undermine the kingdom. So it says that Shlomo could have married Avishag, but that means that, of course, Dovid HaMelech did not marry Avishag, because if he did, that she would be Eshet Aviv, and Eshet Aviv is Asura Midiraisa. So how could we say that Shlomo was allowed to marry Avishag? We seem to be taking for granted that David HaMelech did not marry Avishag. Now that, the truth is that there's all types of strange issues going on here, but you'll notice that in the preparation, in the introduction to the series of Mishnayos that we were talking about of the Melech, we also put in, sort of sneakily, we managed to get in the question of the Cheker HaChein and the Hevel HaYofi and the story about Boaz and Ruth and the story of Palti ben Laish. Very, very strange stories that all have to do with women that were associated with the creation of the Malchus Beis David or with the actual Malchus Beis David. Now, one of the strangest stories that has to do with these strange, unique sexual relationships in the Malchus Beis David is the story of Avishag. And the way that I understand it is that the relationship with Avishag was the continuation of the original formation of Malchus Beis David, which was the unique relationship described earlier between our turnip-skinned Boaz and his root, which means that the Malchus was initially based on a relationship that seemed highly sensual and, in fact, was bedavka. What he tells her is to stay with him the night, which is outrageous. Because after all, if he's in such a state of arousal that the Pusik is going to describe his erection, it certainly seems strange that he should say, stick with me. That relationship was fundamental to the Malchus and became the relationship of David and Avishag. Now, the reason that I say this is because the Gemara here makes it clear, based on their understanding of the nature of the Pusik, and the way it is that Adoniel was short-circuited and the Malchus was given to Shlomo, that was all in the context of the way in which we contrast the relationship to his wife, David's wife Bathsheba, who is the mother of Shlomo, and his relationship to Avishag. And the Gemara brings it out in ways that seem so extremely outrageous that there are even the Ben Ish Chai doesn't, you know, can't believe the Gemara means literally. Okay, well, I'll point that out to you. But the idea of the Gemara is bedavka to change our vision of the specific relationship of a melech in terms of his sexuality. So how do we know that David HaMelech did not marry Avishag and that you have a right to say she could have been married by Shlomo? So Avishag Mai, Dichtiv, Vamelech David Zaken, Baba Yamin. Okay, so we have this really seems to be a little bit of a crazy story in which the king is old, he's unable to be warmed in his later years, and that was because of the story of the Begadim with Shaul HaMelech. So Vayomer Lo Avadav, his servants tell him what seems to be a really crazy thing, that he should have the most beautiful virgin in the kingdom. Yevakshu l'Adoni HaMelech na'ara betula v'amda lifnei HaMelech v'tehi lo sochenet v'shachva v'chetecha, let her sleep on your lap v'cham l'Adoni HaMelech, and that will keep you warm. Now that's a rather strange way to keep warm, and obviously if we're looking for a virgin, I mean virgins are not particularly warmer than other women, we're not talking about a electric heating pad if we're looking for Avishag. And indeed, we go out and we search all of Klal Yisrael, Vayevakshu Nara Yafa B'chol Gvul Yisrael, and the only one they could find that is beautiful enough for David HaMelech is Avishag. Okay, now that itself strange enough. So, it says, V'nara Yafa Ad V'Tilo Melech Sochenet V'Tershar Atil. So she is serving the king, and Sochenet, Bepashtas, means that she was warming him. Sochen, she's an agent for the king and gives him comfort. So now, Gemara says, okay, here's how we understand the relationship. So Avishag says to David, it would be nicer if we got married, don't you think? Then he nasvant, So why don't you marry me? So Amalek loved Amalek says to her, I'm not allowed to marry you. Because as we saw before, Amalek is limited to having 18 wives, which David Amalek already had. So she says, Chasre v'gadava, nafshe v'shlaba nakid. Yep, that's what happens to a ganav who doesn't have any place to steal because everybody's put on these new locks and he can't get into any of the houses. Now all of a sudden he's a very honest man and he presents himself as being honest. So suddenly you are a big tzaddik. So now you can't get it up. And now you're claiming that, well, I'm such a tzaddik after all. I'm not allowed to marry you. So here is where the Ben Ish Chai Tainus, how could she possibly have spoken that way? It's outrageous. And it must mean something else. He goes, okay. But the whole point over here, as we'll see, is precisely to bring out this issue. Because what happens is, now remember, you have to understand the context. The context is makes this an absolutely mad story. What happens is, of course, is that the Adonio is trying to become king, and that's what we started with. And he says, you know, he puts on the crown. Remember we had yesterday, and he's pretending that the crown fits him. And Nosan Hanavi gets together with Bathsheba, and he, you know, he tells her, look, you know, we're going to be in bad shape because if Adonio becomes melech, and then we are basically on the outs, and that's going to be the end. You've got to go in to David HaMelech and you have to tell him that Adonio is trying to be king and the whole Klal Yisrael is waiting to hear from you. What is your position on who should become king after you? And this is like the last message that David HaMelech is going to give to Klal Yisrael. This is my Ratzon. And the entire country is waiting as Nosan Hanavi then comes in and says to him, all of Klal Yisrael is waiting. I mean, you think the new pope is a question with their silly puffs of smoke. They're sitting over here and they're waiting to hear from you. Who is the next king? So what does David HaMelech say? Well, call me Bathsheba. So, okay, Amarlohu. So according to the Gemara, the call to Bathsheba is directly inspired by the statement that we just had of Avishag HaShunamis, as if all of a sudden at this last moment where he has to give this message, it is now important for him to prove his virility to Avishag HaShunami. I mean, that is crazy. All of Klal Yisrael is waiting. Nosan Hanavi is there. And he's saying, call me Bathsheba. I'm going to have to demonstrate my virility since she thinks that I am not able to marry her. Fine. So it says, Vatovo Bathsheba al HaMelech HaChadra, and Rav Yehuda Amarav says that actually at this moment, if you read the words, Vatovo Bathsheba al HaMelech HaChadra, VaMelech Zaken Ma'od, VaVishag HaShunamit, Misharet et HaMelech, you find that you have 13 words. Each one of those 13 words was another act of intercourse that David HaMelech was able to show that he doesn't even have any time between climaxing, and he can sleep with her 13 times in a row, and Botar Sha'a, Kincha Bathsheba, Bishlosh Esrei Mapot, and there's nobody better than him. This is while all of Klal Yisrael is waiting outside the door to hear who is supposed to be the king. Now, does this make sense to you, or is this total madness? Now, the only way that, and that B'davka, you understand, there was no refractory period. And remember, I've told you about the Rambam's Mer Nevuchim point, that refractory periods are an indication of the whole issue of sexual reproduction being an evolutionary trick. It obviously is not something that really is part of the way that you would go ahead and act, because if it were, you know, how come all of a sudden there's this refractory period in which, in fact, all of a sudden it's really true what Avishag HaShunami says? Now, how do you explain that? Here there was no refractory period. And you will remember the importance of that refractory period in David HaMelech's own understanding of Avivi Miyazavuni Vashem Yasveni. He claimed that that was the reason that his father died, because of the Et Yoshel Nochash. And the Et Yoshel Nochash is, in fact, the very thing that destroys sexual relationships. And that because of that, you know, my father turned away from my mother and nobody cared about my conception. So that means that this entire piece is central to David HaMelech's life. This is not a small issue. And he feels that this is the only way that he can give over the Malchus to Shlomo instead of Adonio. That is absolutely astonishing. So what it means is that the relationship that was initially the relationship between Boaz and Rut was fundamental in defining the Malchus. He's using that relationship in order to be able to define the entire future of the Malchus. Fine. So because of that, the Gemaras that had before the sugyas of the Shekrachin Vehevela Yofi and all of those sugyas are connected directly to this sugya as well. Daniel, is it important to interrupt her? Because we're sort of late.
Did Rabbi said what is the reason in the evolution of the refractory period? But I didn't hear. Rabbi, explain that
no? No, I just said over the Rambam in the Moreh Nevuch.
So I'm set up half hour shiur tonight to finish the.
Okay, leave me alone. Give me a break. Every once in a while, a break. I'm drinking. I'm being a good boy. I even refilled.
I don't want Rebbe to rush the sugya. So instead of looking at the clock, it's so critical. Is it so critical?
You just like it because it's sexy. That's all. It's not so critical for you if you're not a melech.
Not yet.
Not yet, right. Bezrat Hashem. Okay, so let's do what we can, yeah? Give me a little bit of time. We'll see how far we can go, and then maybe I'll have to do some tomorrow. Om Reb Shaman Bar Abba, take a look from here at how devastating divorce is. Kama Koshin Gerishin. Shari David HaMelech Hitiru Lo L'Yachet V'Lo Hitiru Lo Garish. In an incredible heter of David HaMelech's own takon of his bezdin, not to be alone with even a betula, he was over on his own takona, and they were matirit for him, even though he could easily have divorced one of his 18 wives, and he could have taken Avishag instead. They didn't even consider such a thing. Omar Rebbe Eliezer, indeed, kolam begareshet ishto rishana, afilo mizbeach morina lav dmaot, even the mizbeach and the Beis HaMikdash cries over such a person. Shenemar, v'zot shenit asu, kasot timat mizbach Hashem, b'chi ve'anaka. I mentioned to you this year that actually the Temanim continue to read this as part of the Haftarah that we end with after discussing the Kadosh Shmi Bagoyim and Atem Mevazim Oto. This is a continuation of the Bizwe of the Mizbeach, which is the Od Zot Shenitas. It's unbelievable. So we had a whole shir on this, if you recall, the connection of the interrelationship between the concept of marriage and the building of the Beis HaMikdash and the Mizbeach. Me'en Od Pnot El HaMincha L'Kachat Ritzon B'yadchem. And therefore, HaKadosh Baruch Hu refuses to look at your korbanos anymore. Uchtiv va'amartem alma. Why? What did I do? Al ki Hashem eid bencha v'neshet neurecha sherata bagadeta ba. Because God was the witness between you and the commitments that you made to this marriage. And you are treacherous. You are dealing with her bebegida. V'hi chavertecha v'eshet britecha. She is your loyal companion. Om Reb Yochanan Vitemer Reb Elazar, Ein Ishto Shel Adam Meta, Elim Ken Mevakshim Mimenu Mamon Ve'Ein Lo. A person's wife dies only because he owes money. People are suing him for money, and he doesn't pay. Shenemar Im Ein Lecha L'Shalem. Don't make a netter that you can't pay up, because if you don't have what to pay, Lama Yikach Mishkafcha Mitachtecha. Why should your wife be taken from beneath you? V'Om Reb Yochanan. If a man's wife, his first wife, dies, then it's as if the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, because this is the siman that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives Yechezkel to show Klal Yisrael about the loss of his own life and the coming destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. Shenemar ben adam, hinani lokeach mimcha et machmad einecha b'magefa. v'lo tispod v'lo tifkeh v'lo tavod imatecha. And indeed, v'adaber la'am baboker v'tomo tishti b'erev. And the Nevi'es was, Hinanim b'chalelet mikdashi ga'on uschem machmad enechem. And you'll see. So this means that the way for Klal Yisrael to understand the loss of Beis HaMikdash was this understanding of the loss of a wife. Omer of Alexandria, Kol Adam Shemeit Eishto B'Yamav Olam Chashoch Ba'ado. If a person's wife dies in his lifetime, it's as if the world turned dark for him. Shenema Or Chashach Ba'ohalo V'Neiro Alav Yidach. So if the light is dark in his home, that is if his own candle is blown up. Rabbi Yossi Bar Chanina Amar, Psiotav Mitkatzrot. He walks with short steps. He walks like an old man. Shinema Yitzru Tzadei Ono. Tzadei Ono is a fascinating idea because on usually means virility. So Tzadei Ono means that the way in which a person is able to walk are an expression of his virility. But now Yitzru, they will become tsar. They will become tight and short. Rabbi Abu Omer Atzato Nofelet. He also no longer has good judgment. Shenema v'tashlicheo atzato. Omer Rabba Barachan Omer Rabbi Yochanan, kashel ezavgam kekriyat yamsuf. It's so difficult to get a man and a woman to be like this, that they should actually match each other and it should be the building of the Beis HaMikdash. It's so hard that it's as if kriyas yamsuf. Shenema elohim moshi v'chidim baita, motzi asirim b'kosharot. So we have the Moshiv Motzi Asirim, okay, I don't know about this Girsai over here, but the Motzi Asirim is Kimotzi Asirim, it's sort of obvious. So it's as if you're comparing it to those who were the prisoners in Mitzrayim and who left. Al Tikri B'Kosharot, Kosharot means had a very good time, when the sun was shining, it was just the right time. Ela Bechi V'Shirot, that's a reference to the Bechi of Mitzrayim and the Shirot of Yisrael at the moment of Kriyas Yamsuf, where HaKadosh Baruch Hu points out to Yisrael, these people are Bitzar, you people are singing. But is that true? The Omer of Yoram Rav Arbayim Yom Kodim Yitzirat Avlad, Bat Ko Yotzeit V'Omer Bat Ploni Luploni. I thought that this is like destiny, a marriage made in heaven. And if marriages are made in heaven, even before the two people are fully themselves, this is before Yetzirat Avlad, so then what would be so hard to match them up? They are pre-matched. It seems like it should be the easiest thing in the world. A bat call comes up and says, bat ploni l'ploni. Yes, that's true. But there's such a thing as zivug rishon, a first marriage, or a first destined marriage, and there's such thing as a zivug sheni, which many people never get, that destined marriage. On Reb Shmuel Bar Nachman, l'kol yesh tmura, you can find something to take the place of everything in life, except the woman of your youthful love. Shema ve'eshet ne'urim, ki yima'es, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, is it possible that I would forget you, like an eshet ne'urim, can't be thrown out. Masir Rav Yudol Rav Yitzchak Burei, Ein Adam Motzei Korat Ruach, Ela Mi Ishto Rishona. Person only feels a sense of satisfaction in life, a place in life, from his first wife. Shinama Yehi Mekorecha Baruch, Usmach Me Eshet Nu'urecha. So the original Mekor of the person, which is your own ability to have a fountain in life, is based on Eshet Nu'urecha. Now, you would think that this means anyone's first wife, but Rav Yitzchak understood that he's talking about a special relationship that not everyone is zochet to. So he asked Gagon Man, can you show me an example of someone who's got that kind of life? And he says, sure, look at your mother. Amalo Gagon Imcha, an Eshet Nu'urecha, like your mom, that's the best. What? But Rav Yehuda was also teaching his son Rav Yitzchak at another time, and he was reading the pasuk Umotzani Mar Mimavet Taisha. The most bitter thing in life, more bitter than death, is our wife. Asher Imitzodim V'Charamim. She's like traps and nets. And Rav Yitzchak said, well, "Who is like that? Your mother," says he. So, how in the world could his mother be both the most horrible Marmy Mavis, more bitter than death woman, and also be an example of this wonderful Yehi Mekor Cha Baruch. I mean, what in the world? Well, she was a toughie, definitely. Mitkaf Tekifa, and she made his life miserable, but Iburi Ma'abra Bemila. She was able to get over her feelings very rapidly. So over here also, Iburi the Benishkai learns, it means that she worked her whole life on being a real mensch. So she changed her personality. It doesn't mean that she actually, in each time she would make his life miserable and then, you know, she would make up. Okay, that's not the pashtus, in any event. Okay, I don't want to, if we don't do the mikvos today, I could do a little bit more. So Shmu says we could do that. Okay. So let's, that way we won't be too late. But anyway, it's important to note that that means that Rabbi Yitzchak is asking for an example. It doesn't mean that everyone is in this position of Eshet Nurim Kiyima Eis. It's a very special place where people are willing to throw out on Eshet Nurim where they did have a Keras Ruach. That's where we find that HaKadosh Baruch Hu feels that it is a begida, but if there was never that level of relationship, so then it's not a begida. In the same way that a person could have three or four wives, I mean, not one of them necessarily is the Eshet Nurim. I see that Ori is scandalized by this, but I think she's taking it to heart and making proper plans. Amrav Shmuel Bar Unya Mishmei Derav. The truth is that an Isha is a Golam. A Golam remembers the way that we use the word in Maseches Kelim, it means that you have an unfinished, still needs to be completed kli, so it's not Mekabel Tumah until Gemar Keli. The point of virginity is exactly this Nakuda. Virginity means that you don't have a workable body yet, because the entire focus of your body at being capable of reproduction is unfinished. You're incapable of reproduction because you're closed up for reproduction, which means that the whole simen of a woman is that she is born like a kli golem. Ve'ena koretet brit el misha asa kli. It's the first person who sleeps with her and changes that status to now become part of the reproductive process. That is her completion. And her sense of connection is deepest to that individual who together with her is going to become part of this future reproductive entity, which was the singular entity that was called Adam originally in Maaseh Bereishis. And we see this because HaKadosh Baruch Hu calls himself the one who made you through having sex with you. Ki bo'alayich osayich Hashem Tzvakot Shemo. So we see that the lashon of bo'alayich is the equivalent of osayich. And if that's the case, that means that that is the way that the individual becomes completed when he is part of this singular entity, which includes HaKadosh Baruch Hu with Yisrael, or HaKadosh Baruch Hu as the third partner, Kavayochel, between Ish ve'Isha, Shechina b'neihem, with the Yud and the He, and so on. Tana ein ish meit ela liishto. Beyond that, when a man dies, the only one who really cares is his wife. And ein isha meita ela levala. A woman dies, the only one that it really makes a difference to. It's not that people don't care. It's that, like, you know, within 2 weeks you've forgotten about it. But the only one to whom it makes the difference is to her husband. Ein ish meit ela liishto. We see from the pasuk that a man dies, really dies, only to his husband, to his wife. Shenemar, Vayomot Elimelech Ish Naomi. Now we know that Elimelech was married to Naomi. So why in his death does it need to mention Ish Naomi? Because that's the point. The death was only meaningful to Naomi, who was his wife. Ve'in Isha Meita Ela Levala. That's this week's parasha. Shenemar, Va'ani Bevo'imi Padan Meita Alai Rachel. What do you mean, Meita Alai Rachel? Rachel died. Why think died for me? Yes, that's the point. No one was affected by the death of Rachel totally except me. And you're not allowed to see the Melech when he gets a haircut. Tana Rabbanan, speaking of that haircut, we have different dinim of haircuts. Melech mistaper b'chol yom. So a king has to have a haircut every single day because he needs to be perfectly groomed. And the posik is mechayev, you, to melech biyof yotechazena inecha. You have to see the king in his full beauty. And a kohen gadol, he has to get a haircut once a week on Erev Shabbos. Why is that? On Reb Shmuel Menachem, on Reb Yochanan. Because the mishmarot are mechadshot on Shabbat. So the new mishmar of all the new kohanim are going to get their first view of the kohen gadol on Shabbos. That first view is the impact that the beauty of the kohen gadol has on them. And that is also the covet of the kohen gadol. So at least for that first glimpse of the kohen gadol, he's got to look like that kohen gadol, freshly groomed. So therefore, Erev Shabbos, he has to get a haircut. A regular kohen gets a haircut once every 30 days. Dichtiv rosham lo yigalechu, ufera lo yishalechu. It's a very interesting pasuk in Yechezkel that describes the way the kohanim are supposed to cut their hair. So they are not allowed to shave their heads, and they should not grow pera. Instead, kasom yichasmu et roshehem. So kasom, as you know, that's the word that we use for lawn trimmers. You know, it's the word for trimming. And it means they have to be trimmed, not shaved. And it says pera, and we know that pera means 30 days, because we learn out pera from Nazir. Here it says pera lo yishalechu, it says here in Yechezkel. And by Nazir, it says, Gadel Pera Sa'arosho. And we know that the Pera that is supposed to be grown by a Nazir is 30 days. Mala Halan Shloshim Afkan, it means the Kohen grows his hair for 30 days. Vitznan Nami, we know that it's 30 days because it's a Mishnah. The Mishnah says, Stam Nizirut Shloshim Yo. Yeah, I understand, but what's the marker in the Torah for that? Hasa Minon. Omer of Matna, the Omar Kro, Kadosh Yihyeh Gadel Pera. Kadosh Yihyeh is a gematria. Yihyeh is 30. So it means that he should have Pera of 30 days if he's a Kohen Hediyot and not shave his hair down. Omer Leiv of Papa Labaya, well, maybe it means Lolir Buklau. Maybe this, Tosfos learns the Sugya as follows, and I believe this is clearly the correct way to understand it. Since it says in the Pasuk that Pera lo yishalechu, it means, you're saying it means that they grow their hair for 30 days, but maybe it means not to get to the stage of 30 days. Don't get to Pera, which means you'd have to have a haircut in the 29th day, and you can't have Pera. So why do you say that you should cut after you already reach Pera? Ema lo lirbu klal, omale. Look at the pasuk, and you'll see why we say it that way. Had the pasuk written lo yishalchu pera, you should not grow pera, then you would be right. You'd have to have a haircut before your hair is 30 days long. But it says pera lo yishalechu. That means pera you should have, pera lehavi. But sheluchi lo lishluchi, don't let it get out of control. So that means you can't go beyond that 30-day growth, which means that the norm of a kohen is 30 days. But wait a minute, if that's the case, so it's a din in the kahuna, so why don't we have that today? How come we allow kohanim to get haircuts not at 30 days, and we allow kohanim to shave their hair? All of this should be part of the dinim of the kohanim fladoiris. So idna nami. Well, remember that in Yechezkel, the pasuk compares wine to hair. And just like, therefore, Dumya de Yayin, just like the two psukim in Yechezkel, one after the other, Pera lo yishalechu continues with V'yayin lo yishtu. But there it says, V'yayin lo yishtu, ko kohen bevoam alachatzer apnimit. So it's a din in the Knesset HaMikdash. So just like the Yayin is Bizman Bia, when you're coming into the Beis HaMikdash, that's when it's Aser. So too, and Shalom Bizman Bia Shari, it doesn't mean you can ever drink wine. So too, Perue Rosh. Having long hair is only prohibited when you're coming in to the Beis HaMikdash. Bizman Bia Aser. But Shalom Bizman Bia, it would be Shari. And therefore, the kohen now is not going into the Beis HaMikdash, so he's allowed to have long hair. Really? Yayin Shalobas Manbiya Shari, you're telling me if he's not walking into the Beis HaMikdash that he's allowed to drink wine? How do you explain the fact that we have a braita that says, Vatanya, Rebbe Omer, Kohanim Asurim, according to me, Omer Ani, Kohanim Asurim Lishtot Yayin Lo'olam, Kohanim are never allowed to drink wine. Now, this is a little bit unfair what the Gemara is doing over here, because we're breaking in to the middle of a braisa. You have to understand what this braisa actually was about. And it says over there that there's a machlokas between Rebbe and the Tanna Kamma. So the Tanna Kamma of the braita said that Bizman Hazeh, if a Kohen knows his Mishmar, and he knows the family of his Mishmar, so that means he can figure out what day of the week he was meant to be Oved in the Beis HaMikdash and what week of the year, so then that day he would not be allowed to drink wine, because if the Beis HaMikdash is rebuilt, then he's going to get a telegram or a notice on his WhatsApp that it's your day to be in the Beis HaMikdash, you're requested to show up immediately. But if he would be drinking wine, he wouldn't be able to show up immediately. They wouldn't let him in. So he wouldn't be able to be Oved. So the Tanna Kamma says, so if he knows the day, so then he's not allowed to drink wine on that day. If he doesn't know the family, which is the day of the week, which is the Beit Av, he only knows the Mishmar, so then he would be usher the entire week of that Mishmar. So Rebbe says, and this is the point at which Rebbe disagrees, because the Tanna Kamma says, if he doesn't know either, he doesn't know his Mishmar and he doesn't know his Beit Av, then he's always usher to drink wine, because how does he know that he's not going to suddenly get a WhatsApp message to show up in the Beis HaMikdash, and here he is having just had a cocktail. So therefore, he's not allowed to drink. Then Rebbe says, well, I disagree. I say that, yes, the truth is they ought to be usher. Avo ma'eseh. There's no way to make that the actual halacha. Shetakanato kukalato. He ends up being able to drink because things are so totally messed up. The fact that we don't have a Beis HaMikdash and we don't have any Seder with Mishmaros and he has no idea what the Mishmar is, it's a little ridiculous to say, you know, you're going to get called up today after, you know, 1,000 years where nobody's had been called up. I know it doesn't seem that we can actually usher him from drinking. So therefore, he argues on the Tanna Kamma, and Abaye pointed out that Keman Shosi Kaani Chamra Idna. How come we do find Kohanim drinking wine nowadays? They are going on Liba the Rebbe. So it's only like the Shita of Rebbe. So that implies that the Rabbanan argue, and they say that Kohanim cannot drink wine. So why can Kohanim grow their hair? They shouldn't be able to have long hair. No, there's no comparison. Look, remember what the reason was of the Tanna Kamma. Mehira yibane Beit HaMikdash. The Beis HaMikdash could be built instantly. And now we're going to need a Kohen that's going to be able to do the Aveda. We're sending out WhatsApp messages. And this guy can't come. You know? So that's terrible. And that is only if he was drunk. So, and if he has long hair, he can't come either, because he's got long hair. Oh, come on. So take him to a barbershop on the way to the Beis HaMikdash. What's the problem? So he's got long hair. I mean, so therefore he can never have long hair. It'll take us 2 minutes to cut his hair. Well, I mean, you could also easily get rid of your wine, because all you need to do is, according to Rav Acha, Asam Nami, Efshad Denayim Port of Ayo, you just need to sleep a little bit or to walk a little bit. Because Rav Acha says, derech meal, walking one meal, or sleeping even a little bit, that will get rid of the impact of the wine on your brain. No, please. I mean, if that were really true, we wouldn't have the kind of drunkards walking around that we do. You obviously forgot what it was that the Gemara said about Rav Acha. V'lav itmar Allah, Omer Rav Nachman, Omer Rabba Bar Avua, that's only if he drank exactly a revius. But if he drank more than a revius, it makes things worse to start walking around or to take a nap. He'll be in worse shape than before. So therefore you can't drink wine, say the Tanna Kamma, because we have no way of getting rid of your hangover and of your drunkenness. So there's a big difference. Ravashi says there's a simple difference. If a kohen does aveda while he's under the influence, right? So that is called aveda under the influence. Tremendous fine. And chi of misa, and is mechala the aveda. So shetuye yayin demach le aveda. So there we were geyser, because if he ended up actually oved under influence, then he would be mekalkel the actual aveda. We'd have to bring the carbon again. There, the rabbanim made gzera. Don't have any wine. But peruei rosh, where even if you've got long hair, you're not going to be mechalel the avoda, lo geyser peru rabbanon. What we've been discussing over here is the question of the relationship between shesuye yayin and the Perue Rosh. So since in the Pesukim Yecheskel, the two are mentioned together, so because of that, the Gemara is associating them, and we're wondering if that's the case, why is there a difference between the Dinim of Bizman HaZeh, where the Chachomim are saying that Perue Rosh, and according to Rebbe, the Perue Rosh are able to, in this day and age, doesn't really matter very much, and the Chachomim are answering only Shesuya Yayin. So yesterday we came up with two different explanations, and that is that the Chachomim are makban on Shesuya Yayin afilu bisman hazeh, because of the fact that if the Beis HaMikdash would be rebuilt, and a Kohen gets a message on his WhatsApp that he's supposed to be coming to the Beis HaMikdash, it would be a message that would be sort of an emergency message, because even if it's not the day of his Mishmar, it's going to be very difficult to find kosher kohanim or in a matzav and who know what to do, that they're able to be yoved. So we're going to need kohanim immediately. And so therefore, if he gets such a WhatsApp message, he's not going to have any way in which he could get himself ready if he is ashes yayin. Even though if he had had exactly a revius, he would have been able to walk for a meal, or he would have been able to go to rest for a little bit. But it gets even worse if you've had a serious amount to drink. So therefore, we say, don't drink. Rebbe disagrees. But when it comes to a haircut, you can always get a haircut, and therefore come in right away. That was one approach that we said. And the last thing that we said was that the difference is obvious, and that is Shesuye Rosh, according to Ravashi, and Shesuye Yayin, according to Ravashi, are going to be Mechala Laveda. And since if he would do it, B'diavad, the Aveda would be possible, over there, where goes it? Mashenkin, if someone has long hair and he didn't cut his hair before doing the Aveda, even though he did the wrong thing, but the Aveda itself would not be Mechulelet, and therefore would be kosher. So because of that, we didn't make a gezeira. That was the last thing that we said from Ravashi. And today, the Gemara wants to question that assumption, because it's not so poshut that it should be true. Meisvet. So the Gemara asks, from the whole basis of this din, of comparing the Perue Rosh to Shesuye Yayin. So in the Braita, it says, how can Ravashi say that there's a difference between Perue Rosh and Shesuye Yayin in terms of Chilul of the Aveda? The Braita says, Ve'elu shebimita, the following individuals who are over on Israel, Chayav Misa Bidei Shamayim, and they are Perue Rosh, Ushesuye Yayin. So now I ask you, Shesuye Yayin, I understand that's a pasuk. Yayin v'shechar al teshtato v'necha v'lo tamutu. This is what happens after the mice of the death in Nodavaviyu. And the Torah says openly that v'lo tamutu, mashman, if someone is ove Shesuye Yayin, there would be a chayav misa b'dei shamayim. But where would we get the idea that Perue Rosh are also chayav misa b'dei shamayim? Obviously, there's only one explanation, and that must be that we see in Yecheskel that Iskish Shesuye Yayin l'Perue Rosh, and that is exactly the pasuk we were talking about yesterday. Rosham lo yigalechu, upera lo yishalechu. So that was the first pasuk that we were derish yesterday. And then it says, V'yayin lo yishtu b'voam, and so on. So apparently, that hekesh, in which one pasuk after the other discusses the din of Perue Rosh and Shesuye Yayin and puts them together, teaches us that Masha Suya Yayin Bimita, Af Purei Rosh Bimita. Now, if we're agreed on this, and this seems to be the entire basis of the Braita, then you have to admit that we should also conclude that Rav Ashi is wrong, because Umina, from that very fact, we should also extend it to mean Masha Suya Yayin Demechach Le'Avoda, Af Purei Rosh Demechach Le'Avoda. Look, we're talking over here about a hekish. The klal is that ain't hekish lemechza. And therefore, once the Torah has made such a hekish, then it should go all the way. Which means that in the same way that there's a chiyuv of misa to both, the din of chilul of the aveda is also on both. So why does Rav Ashi say that a kohen who does the avoda with purei rosh is not going to be chayiv? Kash. This is indeed a bit of a problem. Now, the truth is that, according to the Gra, it shouldn't say Kasha, because the Gemara answers this question in Ta'anit. And it says that since it specifies over here that it's in terms of Lo Yamutu, it means that the Torah itself is limiting the Hekesh to the Inyan of Misa, but not to the Inyan of Chilo. So he doesn't like the Girsa over here that says Kasha. Okay, going on. This idea that you're telling me that the basis of the Chiyav of Misa, Bidei Shamayim, is Yecheskel. I mean, we all know that we can't really learn a halacha like this from Yecheskel. It would only be a remez. So where's the mukkar? Until Yecheskel came along, you know, there was quite some time before Yecheskel came to teach us dinim. Well, what did we think up to then? So asks Ravina to Rav Ashi, and before Yecheskel, I had the lo Yecheskel, Maya Iman Amra, so who taught us this? Said Rav Ashi to him, look, we've got a lot of cases like this, all right? And where it's even brought out in a way that would make you more nervous. Take a look at what the way Rav Chisda puts it. The following thing we never learned out from Moshe Rabbeinu's Torah, but we did learn it out from Yecheskel. Okay, how are you going to explain this? Listen to this. Tov ze mitorat Moshe Rabbeinu lo lamadnu, ad shebo Yecheskel v'limdanu. Kol b'nechar arel lev v'arel basar lo yavo migdashi. So it says over there that whether a Kohen is a physical arel, or whether he is someone whose heart has turned against the Lord, so how did we know, Bichlal, that there was an iser on an arel to do aveda, even though he was an ones because he was from a family of hemophiliacs and I couldn't give him a bris milah because it was dangerous? The only mokah that we have to that is that there's two different dinim. One would be an aral lev, so he bedafka didn't get a bris milah. And the other one is, even if he wanted as much as he could, but he's an aral basar lemaisa, the aral, I should say, is the real Russian. He's an aral basar, and therefore, he's also Usher. So before Yecheskel came, you could ask Rav Chisda the same question. How could Rav Chisda say we learn a fundamental halacha from Yecheskel? And what about until Yecheskel came? Ad Shabar Yecheskel, Man Amra. So obviously the meaning of that is that there's often times that our halacha l'meishim Sinai that we have as a Gemara, meaning as a Kabbalah. So we had a Gemara all of those centuries when Yecheskel came. So he put that halacha into a pasuk in the Kabbalah, which is the Nevi. Ota Yecheskel v'yasbacha across, so that we should have it as a k'dover kosuv. So the same thing is true over here. We always knew Hachanami. We always knew that the din of a prue rosh is that either zechiyav of misa b'dei shamayim. It was a Gemara Gemiri law. There was no pasuk. Comes along Yecheskel, and by putting these two psukim together, he was asmeche akro. Here it throws in, this is really a little bit strange, because, it should have belonged before, because this is basically what the answer was in Tanis. But Lamaisa, if we are gores this, and there are Rishonim who are definitely gores it, whereas that before we assumed that ain hekesh lemechza, and therefore there was no way that we could explain, and we left it with Akasha, there was no way we could explain why we would say that we would be comparing in Yecheskel Purei Rosh to the Shesuya Yayin only legabe the Chiyav Misa. How is that possible if ain hekesh lemechza comes along now the Gemara to answer that? V'chi gemira yilchata only legabe So we know that l'chatchila there never was such a din, and therefore we have a right to say that if Yechezkel put in a remez that this is only for that halacha, so then you don't say that a remez is considered to be something that is a ein hekesh l'merchsa. If gufa, it's based on the whole idea of the Gemara Gemiri law. Okay.
And the Gemara would take this set also.
Yeah, because that's not the answer that the Gemara really gives. And you're saying a completely different thing over here, that since it's a Gemara Gemiri law, and the only Yechezkel is only la'as b'chiyakura, so you can't ask the kasha. Okay, anyway, as we had yesterday, the word kason, which, as I pointed out, is used today for literally for the word trimming, which is used both for lawns and for heads. And we're saying over here, kason yichsimut roshehem. What exactly did Yechezkel mean by that, that they should have a trim? Tana, what that means is, kemin tisporet lulianit. This is a lulianit haircut. What is that? My tisporet lulianit? Somebody called and busted up the recording. My tisporet lulianit, Amar Rav Yonah Mishmuel, this is a very singular haircut. Tisporet yechidah. And what exactly was it? Hechidami. Amar Rav Ashi, it was such a precise haircut that rosho shel zeh betzad ikaro shel zeh. The tip of one hair touched the bottom of the next hair. So it was a very precise and perfect haircut. And indeed, Shalu at Rebbe in the Brighter, we have that the Talmidim asked Rebbe, what did the Tisporet of a Kohen Gadol look like? And he said, go to my son-in-law, who is Ben Elasha, and take a look at his haircut. So Tzu'uru mi Tisporet shel Ben Elasha. Tanya, as the Brighter explained, Rebbe said, everybody thinks my son-in-law is an idiot, and that he blew all of his money on haircuts because he had some kind of fetish about haircuts. But that's not what it was. He didn't blow all his money on haircuts for nothing. He was interested in establishing and then being able to show people what the Tisporet of the Kohen Gadol looked like. Hadron Alach Kohen Gadol, halavai. So we should get back to you, oh, Mr. Kohen Gadol, and also Perek Kohen Gadol, and now when they...
We
go!
We nether!